the inexplicable. The last unconquered kingdom. Now the time has come to answer the unanswerable. To dance into the abyss. To finally know the mind of God.
That's where I come in. I'm Lionel Nimrod, inventor of the interstellar laser ray gun toy, and Mackay off of ABC TV's Star Ark. Come with me now into the swirling mists of human inadequacy.
In the fantastic Odyssey, me and Anne Bancroft voyaged in a miniature submarine deep into a human brain. But that was just a frivolous fantasy film adventure. The brain was made from papier-mâché, the plankton merely twigs. Even Anne Bancroft was just a man in a rubber suit. Today, we are going on another fantastic odyssey, but this time, it's deadly earnest. We are going to find out just what exactly is the human mind. So join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World! And please welcome your cabin crew on flight X to Destination Unknown.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And I'm called Richard Herring.
The human mind. It is more complicated than the most advanced retractable pencil, and yet still small enough to fit inside the head of that dwarf off of Fantasy Island.
It was the human mind that enabled the novelist Cervantes to subvert the romance genre from within in Don Quixote, and the mind which allowed my childhood enemy, Clive Matimo, to cleverly change my name from Stuart Lee to Pooh Art Wee. Which was very funny, as you can imagine.
All humans have a mind, apart from Jimmy Savile, who has two, his own and the mind of an elderly man, which he keeps in a soil-filled bag and uses to cheat on his Mensa IQ tests.
Now, there are people who believe that the mind has extraordinary powers. If you or I had such abilities, we'd probably use them to cure disease or prevent war. But those people who have them seem to use them to bend forks.
Well, Stu, we must not question what we don't understand.
Surely that's the whole point of this program, though, Rich.
Oh, yeah. Since our primitive ancestor first stuck a pointy stick into his own or his friend's ear, man has been trying to find out just exactly what the mind is.
Many broadcasters have tried and failed to uncover the mind's secrets. There was The Ascent of the Mind with Dr. Jonathan Miller, and The Naked Mind with Desmond Morris.
And Mind Your Language with with Francoise Pascal, the most successful ratings-wise.
But we'll succeed in the wake of their pathetic failure, because they wouldn't recognise the truth if they awoke one morning to find it next to them in bed saying, "Hello, I'm the truth." Good party, wasn't it? Now, how'd you like your eggs? So let's get going. Now, just because you can't see an actual mind inside a head doesn't mean that it isn't there. Sometimes I hide in my neighbour's garden. They can't see me, but I am there. Watching. So is the mind simply what we can see, the brain?
There are two types of brains on the planet Earth. The brains we have in our head, and brains from Thunderbirds. Who, ironically, doesn't even have a brain. Just some barely transparent string.
And this evening we're joined by brain expert Professor Tara Coogan from the Brain Department of Leicester Polytechnic.
Good evening, Richard. Now, a lot of people think the brain is a really boring grey blob, but it isn't, Richard. It's an interesting grey blob.
Tell me, Professor Coogan, is it true that if you eat human brains, you will go mad?
Well, why would you like to know?
Just curious, you know.
Well, yes, Richard, it is true. You would go mad, but you'd have to be pretty mad to want to eat human brains in the first place.
Or hungry.
Or had a few pints and it's too late to phone for a pizza.
Yes, Richard, but alcoholics must be aware. Over a 40-year period, a heavy drinker will be left with only 15% of their brain cells fully functional. But, Richard, 90% of the brain is never used anyway. The trick, then, Richard, for any drunks listening, is in trying to drink in such a way that you only destroy the 90% of the brain that you don't actually need.
Traditionally, it's believed that the brain is divided into two parts, the left and the right, But within the last month, the professor and her team have discovered that the brain is in fact divided into three parts.
Yes, Richard. One third of the brain remembers facts about everything that begins with letters A to L. The second third remembers everything from M to Z.
But what of this newly discovered third part?
The third part remembers everything about xylophones. As is shown by the case of TV's right-wing astronomer, Patrick Moore. Now, Richard, a few years ago, Patrick was a young, un-eccentric and thin astronomer. One day, while on his way to a telescope, he passed the multi-story xylophone shop, Xylophonorama.
Oi, watch out, mate! A xylophone has been dropped from above the 11th floor!
Ow! My eye!
This accident destroyed the M to Z zone of Moore's mind, and his xylophone area subsequently expanded to fill two-thirds of his head, as well as a large area of his stomach, making him the overweight, one-eyed, eccentric reactionary we know and love today.
Professor Moore, tell us a thing about Mars, then.
I'm terribly sorry, but I just can't. That begins with a letter I don't recognize. But listen, I can do this.
Thus, Patrick Moore became the toast of the twin worlds of xylophones and space. Well, thanks, Tara. So much for the boring old brain.
Every single country in the world has a radically different view of the mind.
The mystical Aborigine people are able to communicate with other members of their tribe over enormous distances, no matter what obstacles are in the way. They use portable phones, provided for them by Michael Hutchins of INXS.
Photography is illegal in the Benelux nations. The inhabitants of these lands believe that cameras will capture their minds as well as their image and leave them as little more than walking zombies. Fortunately, there's nothing there worth photographing.
The Swiss have no word in their language for mind, but have over two different words for chocolate.
In England, a man thinks about sex 9 times every second of the day. His name is Andrew Mackay of Foskett Road, Fulham, and his phone number is 071-736-465. Please ring him up and tell him to stop. It is dirty and wrong.
Now, in order to answer the question, what is our mind, we are creating our own computerized mind live in the studio tonight.
I'm over here with the inventor of the mind, Brian O'Green.
Hello, I am Brian O'Green. Thank you for asking.
And Brian, you are a computer journalist for Sinclair ZX81 User Magazine.
Yes, thank you for asking. I am a computer journalist for that journal, which is the journal that is in called Sinclair ZX81 User Magazine.
So you've made a computer mind, then?
I have done that of which you speak of. This is it here. I've used my computer, the ZX Spectrum in this case, and connected it up to this glass bell jar full of KY jelly and hairs, which will be home to the mind.
KY jelly and hairs? Is that the ideal substance for a mind to grow in?
Just KY jelly, really. The hairs just got stuck in it when I dropped it on the floor in my room. Now, although the process has only just started, my computer mind that I have inmade should already have enriched the mental level of our 4-year-old child. Listen.
The mind is the thing that after Richard said it's on the body, then he is fat. And what the man is the mind doing? My friend is on going round, and the weirdest word in the world is weirdest.
Well, no firm conclusions there then, Brian.
No, thank you for asking, but it is early days.
Now, is the mind just something we think exists? Is the mind all in the mind?
That's the opinion of neurologists, scientists who study the nervous system. They argue that what we perceive as the mind is merely the buzzing of nerves and the nervous system. But they would say that. They're neurologists. It's in their interest to make out nerves are important.
Can a mind exist without a nervous system? The stories of bodiless living heads of 9th century East Anglian King Edmund in Alfric's Lies of the Saints, and of the assembly of the wondrous head in the Welsh folktale Branwen, Daughter of Lear, are of course well known to us all. But less well known is that these incidents inspired a series of copycat crimes throughout the ancient world, including the Passion of St. Ian, recorded in Ethelfric's 10th century Death of St. Ian.
S- St. Ian lived a good and holy life.
Bless you, my child, for though you are poor, your riches are in heaven.
But the wicked Viking Ifan had St. Ian beheaded and threw his holy head into the blackberry bushes. But through the conjuring tricks of magic Lord Jesus, St. Ian lived on in head form. One day, a humble woodcutter encountered him.
Soon be home after a hard day's woodcutting.
Woo, woo.
Oh, a flying head thing. Help!
Ah, no, it's me, St. Ian. Got you. I've got the magic Christian ability to have no body and flap my ears and fly.
Very funny, St. Ian. Now I've dropped all my twigs and they're spoilt.
And so St. Ian flapped off to Basingstoke to see the city.
Ah, it's me again, St. Ian. I've been hiding in a flower pot and no one can see me. It's Ace. An old lady bent over and I saw her pants.
St. Ian, is that you in that flower pot?
Oh, crikey, it's Wolfstan, Archbishop of London and York. Now I'll catch it.
St. Ian, when the Lord Jesus granted you the fairy ability to have no body and fly, he meant for you to use it for good and holy works, not to hide in flower pots and spy upon old ladies.
Oh, sorry. I didn't think.
Now, come with me. I've got a job for you, St. Ian.
Ow! Ow! Unlucky for me, coconuts haven't yet come to this country. Ow! The Archbishop's made me the target on the Canterbury Cathedral East of Baked Coconut Shine.
That should put an end to St. Ian's flying head fun. Your turn next, woodcutter. Then you, old lady.
It was 17th century French dwarf René Descartes who, despite the handicap of his nationality, made the biggest contribution to the philosophy of the mind. His theory of the duality of mind and body was formulated in 1660 in Paris at a fashionable party.
Yes, you know, you are a very beautiful woman, but although I have just met you, it is your mind which I like the best.
Oh, yes. And what do you mean by the mind, exactly?
Oh, well, you know, your mind is a garden, and your thoughts are the little flowers in it. I am an intellectual, actually, so I know.
But surely the mind, unlike the body, is thinking, indivisible substance. And as such, we can affirm only what we can prove. We cannot be sure anything exists.
Oh, yeah, I get it, because, you know, what I've always thought is that maybe I'm the only real human, yeah? And that everyone else is robots who are trying to trick me. I've written a discourse about it, but, you know, I haven't heard back about it yet. That's what you mean, though, huh?
No, I think the mind exists in isolation.
Yes, because everything else has been put there by the robots.
No. What I'm saying is, I think, right? Therefore, I am.
Oh, yeah, great. So do you want to come back to my place, then?
God, you disgust me. You're ignorant, you're physically repulsive, and you're French.
Is that yes or no, then?
Nice!
So, despite their exotic-sounding continental names and flowery velvet shirts, the philosophers are no better than common neurologists. So, can we come to understand the mind by examining its more mysterious powers?
Such as imagination. In the early 1980s, the pop group Imagination tried to represent visually the mysterious nature of the imagination itself by each cutting off one of their trouser legs.
We can imagine many things. We can imagine, like John Lennon, that there's no heaven, that all the people might live as one, and that Yoko Ono is in some way attractive or talented. And we can imagine that our ex-girlfriend is trying to steal our friends off us and turn them against us.
The imagination, isn't it? In its purest form, though, in childhood.
Yeah, I remember as a child, I used to imagine that I was adopted. Then I found out that I was.
That's very sad, Stuart. Although I have noticed you cynically dropping it into conversations with girls to make you look interesting.
Yeah, that is an advantage.
This week, we sent a recording team to monitor the burgeoning imagination of a child at the home of the Lily family of Whitley.
Mummy, look.
What is it, Sebastian?
I've drawn a picture of you with my crayon, look.
What's the meaning of this? Me, with green hair, a blue head?
How old are you?
4 3/4.
4 10 months, Sebastian. Do you think a grown man of almost 5 years old should waste his time with this frickery? Listen, I, your mother, and all the adult world are the sworn enemies of the imagination in all its forms. And I'll have no freedom of expression under my roof. And I told you, your mother is called Mrs. Lily, not Mummy.
But, Mum, Mrs. Lily, I love you.
Ha! Speak not to me of love. Love is a hypocritical cloak of nicety born out of the basest human needs. Now get up to your room and don't come down until you've arranged all your possessions into alphabetical order. Or you'll feel the kiss of my whip.
But I can't go up to my room. Spiggy Tig is asleep there.
Who is this Spiggy Tig?
It's Sebastian's imaginary friend, Mr. Lily. A blanket. He pretends it can speak.
Not only do I find you have an imaginary friend, Sebastian, but it isn't even a human being. What good will a bit of rag be to you when you start work?
A lot good, actually. Spiggy Tig can fly and do magic.
Oh, can he now? Then he must die. Get the scissors, light the gas, bring fire!
Well, since we taped that report, we've heard that Sebastian has run away from home. Mr. and Mrs. Lily have issued a statement saying, "Obviously, we regret our son's disappearance. Now we are forced to have union a second time and spawn another. But we shall not be so slack with him."
Well, I had a child once, actually, myself, but it escaped. Let's go back over to Brian O'Green to see how his computerized mind is developing. Brian?
It is developing well, thank you for asking. My enjarred mind has now reached the intelligence quotient of a 15-year-old.
The mind is like really something amazing. It's like the Pet Shop Boys say, "Always on your mind." I really like them, because although they're a pop group with good music, their words are like really clever, you know. But sometimes I think that I'm the only real human and everyone else is just robots trying to trick me.
Well, good. We're really getting somewhere there, aren't we, Brian?
Thank you.
Is the mind simply a product of complex conditioned responses? For example, over the centuries, all the religions of the world have conditioned people to associate sex with guilt, shame and fear.
Yeah, good, isn't it?
Yes, Richard. Well, it's well known that Pavlov conditioned dogs to salivate when he rang a bell.
Of course. Unlike Pavlov, we would never perform cruel experiments on innocent animals.
No, so instead, we're going to experiment on Mrs. Doris Mott, the old woman who lives downstairs from me, and every Sunday plays a whole half hour of hymns on her Bon Tempi organ.
Yes, although I'm not really that religious, I still find her music quite inspiring. Please welcome now a wonderful woman, Mrs. Doris Mott. Come on, yes.
Oh, hello. Thank you, thank you. It's so nice of you to have me on the wireless.
Yeah. Now, we're going to test whether our minds are a product of programming and conditioning by offering Mrs. Mott a choice of tea or coffee.
Tea or coffee, Mrs. Mott?
Oh, thank you. Tea would be lovely with all this excitement, Richard. I don't like coffee at all. It doesn't agree down there, you know.
But what Mrs. Mott and Richard don't know is that we're going to attempt to change her tea preference by administering her an increasingly violent electric shock each time that she chooses tea.
Here's your tea, Mrs. Mott. Nice and hot.
Oh, thank you, Richard. You're a credit to your mother, you are.
Are you sure you want that?
Oh, yes, thanks. I'm parched.
Let's try again, Mrs. Mott. What do you want, tea or coffee?
Tea? I don't like coffee. Tea, please.
Mott, tea, coffee, which?
Tea, I say, tea.
Mrs. Mott, for the last time, what do you want?
Coffee, babe, coffee. I'll have to have coffee.
Good. I'll give Mrs. Mott a cup of coffee, Richard, and thus my hypothesis is proven.
We've run out of coffee, Stuart. Mrs. Mott will have to have tea, despite all your rudeness.
I wanted tea, really, all the time. I only said I'd have coffee to try and be polite. It's tea that I like to drink, not coffee, I said.
Bitch.
Well, Mrs. Mott, thank you for your help. I'll see you on Sunday, eh? I'll bring my tambourine along. Stuart wasn't even able to condition the conscious mind of an old, weak woman.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see you do better.
Wait till Sunday, mate, wait till Sunday. Think then, Stuart, how intricate the unconscious mind must be. What can dreams tell us of the mind?
Perhaps the most famous dreamer of all time is the American activist Martin Luther King. He had a dream in which people of all races walked hand in hand. King also dreamed, on occasion, about a sort of giant ant that lived under his bed. Although this dream failed to inspire the 60s civil rights movement in the same way. But who is to say what is the normal state of a mind? Perhaps the unbalanced state of so-called madmen is simply the mind free of conditioning and restraint, and something we should attempt to treat with sympathetic understanding.
Before his career in comedy, Russ Abbott was an intensive psychiatric nurse who ran his own institution near Reading, Russ Abbott's Madhouse. Russell transferred the institution to television, making household names of previously hopeless inmates like Basden Bond, Cooperman, Jimmy McJimmy, and Les Dennis.
We say that the American multiple murderer Ed Gein was mad for justifying his chainsaw killings in terms of his religious beliefs. And yet we think it's somehow praiseworthy of Mother Teresa of Calcutta to selflessly devote herself to the poor for the same reasons.
Contemporaries of the artist Vincent van Gogh said he was mad. And he was. He cut off his ears, committed suicide, and drew loads of really weird pictures.
In Victorian times, lunatics were thought to be brought out by the light of the full moon. But now we know this isn't true. Lunatics are attracted to any bright light, and thousands of them die every year when they flutter into the hot bulbs of electric lamps. Some of the most impressive investigation into the mind has been into the memory, and foremost in this research has been that of Tory MP and quiz show host Giles Brandreth. In his book, Oh Dear, Remember When, Giles Brandreth's bumper book of the memory. And here's Giles Brandreth and his wife, Mrs. Brandreth, to read out their favourite extracts.
Hello.
Hello.
The voice of dead Anglo-American poet T.S. Eliot singing his number one hit, Memory, from the musical Cats. Ironically, however, T.S. was consistently unable to remember the birthday of his wife, Sarah Brightman, who consequently left him for diminutive cello player Julian Lloyd Webber.
People often say their memory is playing tricks on them. This was never more true than for Anthony Chalmers of Stockport, who awoke one morning to find that his memory had stretched a piece of cling film over his toilet, loosened the top of the salt cellar, and left a string of obscene words on his answer phone.
DJ Andy Kershaw has a photographic memory, except his is an amateur photographic memory. All of Andy's memories are blurred, out of focus, and cut off at the neck. Most of them are of glamour and swimwear. He can't actually remember anything about his life between the ages of 9 and 11 because he left a lens cap on his face.
But old people's memory is the strangest and most mysterious of all. They find it impossible to remember their own names. And yet, if you ever want to know even the smallest detail about your local bus system, just ask an old person. A lot of the time, you don't have to ask. They're going to tell you anyway.
Well, thank you to Giles Brandreth and Mrs. Giles Brandreth for coming in to shamelessly plug their book there. Deja Vu is another of memory's tricks. Over to our paranormal correspondent, Roland Pavey.
Hello. My name's Roland Pavey, and I live a life of spiritual purity in my cave in the small Somersetshire village of Incester. Here, after a couple of drinks, I develop my psychic abilities, which I have. Deja vu. Every now and again, we get to feel a certain thing has happened before. Isn't an English word, of course, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's rubbish. Deja vu is Spanish and literally means some javelins and describes the eerie feeling for a Spaniard that he is about to be hit by some javelins again. So do these spiritual mystics hold the key to all our minds? In her book Mind Magic, Betty Shine says our brain is a computer which is useless without the electrical energy of mind power, and that all our minds join in an energy dimension allowing us to communicate telepathically and visit the Wisnid ancients sat at their semicircular table in the Universal Great Hall of Knowledge, if we want.
Shine also tells us of the case of Senora Isabel Casas, an old lady who arrived, terrified and feeble, at a Barcelona police station early one morning in 1980.
Good day, terrified and feeble old lady. What can we do for you this morning?
I have had a fearful dream in which my neighbor, Rafael Perez, a 56-year-old chef, who I have not seen for some days, looked a bit upset. It was awful. You must investigate.
Well, Signora Casas, it is not usually police policy to waste time, manpower and money in investigating an old lady's dream. But lucky for you, this is Spain. A superstitious Catholic nation with an almost third world mentality. And as far as me and the rest of the police are concerned, in Spain, an old lady's dream is as good as actual hard evidence. Let's go.
Oh, hold on.
What is it?
Oh, it's all right. For a second, I just felt like I was going to be hit by a javelin. After last time, well.
All right, let's go.
Look, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you just kicked in my door. Of course I'm bloody upset.
Yay! I was right!
Yay, Signora Casas! You truly are the handmaid of magic, Lord Jesus. Let the festivities begin!
And now, every day at 3 o'clock in the morning, thousands of Spanish pilgrims visit Raphael's room and wake him up in the hope of witnessing another psychic telepathic miracle.
Well, all the information is in, excepting one important item. Peter Fenn's Hammond organ, believe it or not, file.
People often say they love someone for the mind, not for their body or physical appearance. But they are lying.
Thanks, Peter. And what was the Hammond organ music this week?
This week, Richard, it was Do the Hustle.
By?
That's by McCoy.
Well, it seems it's time to answer the big one. Just what is the human mind? So let's see if Bryna Green's computer mind has come up with the goods.
Yes, the computer mind that I have inmade has now reached the mental powers of a human being of 200 Earth years. Let the mind speak its mind.
Yeah, hello, yeah. Well, the mind, is separate from the brain, like nice Mr. Lee said. And all these powers, imagination, telepathy and whatnot, that it has, are preparing it for the day when all human minds will bond together in gas form in order to bend forks, like
Well, thank you, computer mind, and Brian.
No, thank you. Thank you for asking me.
So until next time, goodbye.
So, friends, that is what our mind is. Our quest is over. When the film Fantastic Odyssey ended, Anne Bancroft and I returned to our dressing rooms. She removed her makeup. I took off my fur and flippers. Anne went on to international stardom. I took a break from acting to concentrate on my pottery. But the Fantastic Odyssey that is your mind is only just beginning. And will continue on until your death and beyond. Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again next week for more journeys into my inexplicable world.
Inexplicable World featured Richard Herring, Stuart Lee, Armando Iannucci and Rebecca Front, and Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Stuart Lee and Richard Herring and produced by the computer-like mind of Sarah Smith.